We come now, Captain Aubrey, to the statement of your position. In or about 40 minutes west, 37 degrees, 40 minutes north. Is that correct?
It is, sir. In sight of Cape Rogue.
And you're in that place in pursuance of your orders?
Yes, sir.
Might it not be suggested, Captain Aubrey, that you found yourself in those waters, those dangerous waters, by cause of a desire in you to seek prizes beyond the strict call of duty?
No, sir. My order stated that the taking and destroying of the enemy's shipping and material was of the utmost importance. My actions in all things have been directed entirely to that end.
Come, cheer the bold Sophie, loud shouting, hooray for our Goldilocks, Jack Shore, the Drake of our day. With the French and the Spanish, the girls all agree, how prodigious the might of his fiddly-dee. How the merchants wail, a-piping their eyes, as they see the bold Sophie sweep up every prize. For in France nor Spain, they've not the navy, as can whack lucky Jack on his fiddly-dee.
Master and Commander by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatized in 6 episodes by Roger Daines. Episode 5, The Question of Principle. The year is 1800, and England is at war with Napoleon.
For the love of heaven, is this a battle?
Stop your battle!
Mr. Marshal, I thought we were coming into our home port.
So we are, Doctor, so we are. But the salute, you see, is for the Admiral's flag.
Hold out your gun!
A wasted expenditure in powder.
Surely you must enjoy the better rhythm of our gunnery, though, Doctor.
I do not.
Oh, well, there's no pleasing some.
Very well done, Mr. Day. Very well indeed.
Thank you, sir!
I was not the one he sought to please you by his ridiculous ceremonial. He hopes only to ingratiate himself with the proprietor of that flagship.
Well, and so he must, for on the Admiral rest all Captain Aubrey's hopes of promotion.
You needn't take it too much to heart, sir. Plenty of men never rise even to commander.
No, my lord.
Lady Keith, my wife, has a great kindness for you, as you know.
I value her friendship the highest, my lord.
As for myself, Captain Aubrey, I should be grieved to see you harm your own prospects.
Thank you, my lord.
So, will you allow me to speak to you very frankly?
Certainly, my lord.
I should think my judgment very poor were I to entrust a line of battleship to a man with your record. Captain, liable to take it into his head to fight a fleet action according to his own notions of strategy. You have received an official reprimand for petulance. For neglect of orders on several occasions. You have acquired a reputation for undue independence, for temerity.
In my own defense,
even
my lord.
For insubordination, sir.
I beg pardon, my lord.
Yet you do possess one prime quality. None of my other cruisers has played such havoc with the enemy's trade. None has taken half as many prizes. You are lucky, Captain Aubrey.
He well might say so, who gets an eighth of all the prize money we take. God damn all admirals!
But is it so bad a thing not to be post-captain, when you're already captain anyway?
Why, yes, certainly. It makes all the difference in the world. You cannot imagine. And there is, too, the eagerness for an extra 18 pence a day.
Oh, a great fortune.
But the vital difference, Doctor, is that a post-captain has his title by right, whereas mine is only by courtesy. And once you're over that fence of being made post, why, you are there. All you have to do from then onwards is to remain alive, and in time, admiral.
Which is the summit of human felicity?
Of course it is.
And nothing but seniority to take you there.
Not interest, not selection, not merit. Nothing save your position on the list.
But till then, you have to get onto it.
Yes, which means truckling to every damn scrub of a senior officer. Yes, sir. No, sir. By your leave, sir.
Your most humble servant, Captain Hart, sir.
Mr. Elias, you are as prescient in your timing as in your business ventures. You could hardly have chosen a better moment to send your boy to sea.
We shall make him a good officer.
My wife and I, Captain Hart, prefer to offer our Henry to a little boat, better than a ship of the line.
Oh, why is that, sir?
The Duke of Clarence tells me that the first raters are rather mixed, if you understand me. Mm-hmm. My wife is very particular. And some of these captains want their young gentlemen to have an allowance of £50 per annum.
At least 50, I should suggest.
Oh, but I dare say a good many of the things can be picked up second hand.
Without a doubt, Mr. Ellis.
But then, I don't mind 50 quid or even more, so long as the ship is genteel.
Well, Captain Aubrey is a thoroughgoing Tory, sir.
Just like me. And your lieutenant, Mr. Dillon, is Lord Kenmare's nephew, I collect.
Oh, quite a gentleman, sir.
Dr. Maturin, too, is a physician. The only one in the fleet to act as ship's surgeon.
And on land, you know, Mr. Ellis, a physician's worth a guinea a visit.
Indeed. That's better. It is well known that only gentlemen are fit to be officers. God has ordained it so, and is his wisdom seen to it that the lower orders should love him for it. Gentlemen, a toast to discipline.
To discipline.
Yeah, discipline.
I see now how much an ambitious subordinate is forced to suffer.
I am truly sorry to impose that upon you. I never thought Molly Hard would give so miserable a dinner. And now I am to be saddled with some damn nuisance of a mid. Also, that scrub heart gratifies Barry Bear.
Well, it was, though, the first time I've known our port commandant to treat you as an honored guest.
He must be very much in that man Ellis's debt. Even to have him in the house.
Yes. A curious study. The pure bourgeois in a state of social ferment.
Ellis, well, what do you expect when a fella sits thinking of money all day long? And they can never hold their wine, those sorts of people.
And that womanly insistence upon authority and beating when he was thoroughly drunk. I would wager that he is very nearly impotent, which would also account for his wife, shall we?
Might be just as well if everybody were impotent.
Do you think so?
I tell you, universal impotence save a world of trouble.
You had better take warning, sir. I do not intend to allow you to insult myself or my service.
Oh, don't you come talking to me now of honor, Lieutenant. I know what you mean by it.
You are angry and you are poor.
Yes, I am. Both of those. And for why? Because it's only the Navy pocket their takings from the prizes they capture. Is that fair?
I will allow you to withdraw from this if you give me your
apology. I will not withdraw. I'll draw. You're only in that uniform for the riches it brings you.
You are mistaken.
You're a liar.
So be it.
He came straight onto my sword's point. Poor, stupid, clumsy soldier.
Well, were you angry with him?
No, it was an ignorant quarrel. He felt that prize money was all our reason for serving at sea, and I had drunk. And I knew I'd not been altogether fair to Captain Aubrey on that very matter.
Well, it is true he does love a prize, but the taking of them is not his prime concern, really.
Just so. In passing, though, I may say not every man would know it. The hands in particular, and you know, Doctor, if they're not kept in check by these steady officers, I think we shall have trouble from them over it. Prize money is heady stuff and no great step to breaking bulk and plunder. There's been some of that already, and mutiny is not a terrible long way further.
You do not believe that.
Mutinies always break out in ships where the discipline is too lax or too severe.
Spithead and the lower.
Fear and greed.
You suggest we see too much of the former, too little of the latter? That surprises me, James.
No. There is a thing which is commonly called discipline. But that is quite strict with us. What I mean by it is something different. The chain of obedience, if you like. A commander is obeyed by his officers because he is himself obeying.
I see.
Then you'll see, too, that if a commander doesn't obey...
Captain Aubrey.
Yes. For instance, those 50 prisoners foisted upon us from the San Fiorenzo. Yes, it was a monstrous abuse. Yet it was an order, but he didn't want them. So he put them ashore on the nearest island.
But he did have to answer for it, James.
But he is lucky. And any admiral will waive principle to look kindly upon a man who brings him prizes.
harsh. But then you're a rich man.
Oh, that's not germane.
Well, a rich man may afford to look for honour.
Tell me, Stephen, do you really think honour is a luxury?
Five vessels, two Setis, a tartan, a snow, and a ship of some force as their watchdog. What do you make of her, Mr. Dillon?
I can't count our gun ports in this light. She's French at any rate. Seems a little small for one of their 18-gun corvettes.
And she lies to windward of her convoy.
May I make a suggestion, sir?
So long as we don't hold a council of war, they never decide anything.
I see. Perhaps you would like me to beat to court.
You see that slovenly little snow between us and the ship? You and our boarding party might take her before she's aware while she masks us from her escort.
But you mean to attack the ship, don't you, sir?
I shall have no choice. But surprise will be everything.
You aren't. You surrender?
Oui, monsieur.
On deck, then, with the rest of the prisoners. Allez, allez, vite!
He's taken her!
Hooray!
Well done, Mr. Dillon! Well done indeed, sir!
Don't
put up those hammocks now, Mr. Watt.
Aye, aye, sir.
Break out our colours.
I'm putting there. Quickly, damn you!
Mr. Marshall!
Aye, Captain, sir.
As soon as Mr. Dillon has that snow paid off, clear through the gap by a starboard bow.
Aye, sir!
But this Frenchman is no fool, privateer or regular navy. Yet too late, my friend, to reverse your manoeuvre now, I think. Mr. Day!
Sir!
A shot across that city's bow there! Give Mr. Dillon a chance to take her as well!
Aye, sir! Range up on the settee, Mr. Rickett!
Aye, aye, sir!
250 yards, Mr. Marshall!
Aye, sir!
Dear God! What an awakening! Oh, what hour is it? Did they beat to quarters and I not hear them? And I, who thought I was becoming quite the naval animal, so I did. What is this?
Quarters, sir. Quarters, if you please.
Then have I missed the drum?
What? No, sir. Surprise action.
Effectually so, in my case. But how does it go? Shall we win the day?
We lose the wind. Mr. Marshall!
Hands to the braces!
Keep us alongside her and keep firing!
Boy, Elisa, the setting has struck the colours.
Thank you, Mr. Ricketts. Let's hope Mr. Dillon's boarding party may pick her up before she changes her mind. Go aloft now and be ready with the royals.
Aye, aye, sir.
Her stern and quarter suffered some.
And we have the measure of her for gunnery, though hers are 8 pounders to our 4. How typical of the French always to be firing high.
Sir, is she not beginning to draw ahead of us?
So she is. The royals, Mr. Marshall, directly.
Aye, sir.
We must not let her outrun us.
She must have been an exceptionally fine sailor, then.
Oh, prodigiously so. For my word of honour, 4 miles to our 3, the Loire, even without her royals. Though we knocked her about to a degree.
She did little damage to you. I'm glad to see it, sir.
Why, yes. No one killed, no dangerous wounds. A pretty action. He thinks I'm shy.
Allow me to present Captain Lahire, sir, of the French Royal Artillery.
Happy Capitaine, sir.
Domestique, monsieur.
The snow turned out to be a Neapolitan prize, sir, the Santa Lucia. Captain Lahire was good enough to take command of the French Royalist passengers and her Italian seamen. And they kept the privateersmen under control while we pulled across to take the Seti, the Pas d'Arles.
Very well done indeed, Mr. Dillon. Last I saw her, she'd struck. But did she then try to run?
Oh, she tried, sir. Yes.
Then I am mightily obliged to you, Captain Lahire. Huh? Obligé, monsieur.
Oh, de rien, mon capitaine. Je vous assure.
What are the other two merchantmen, Mr. Dillon?
I regret to say they were far too far downwind by the time we'd secured the Pas d'Arles.
Oh, that's a shame.
We shall be able to complete our commercial endeavour, sir. They ran down the coast. By now, they'll be lying under the guns of the battery at Almorara.
Good. We shall have to look into that bay, then. Many prisoners?
A score, just. The Snows people are all allies, of course.
When did the Gloire take them?
8 days ago, sir.
Really?
Yes, sir. She is a fair prize.
Cape Ifac and Cape Almorara.
And the village there, where lie our other two merchantmen?
From what the Spanish prisoners have been saying, I gather the city, the Zalak, has a cargo of quicksilver hidden in sacks of flour.
Well, then we must handle her with great care, eh?
Of course.
What?
With great care, sir.
He thinks I'm shy.
This
that I left off chasing the Gloire because I chose not to get hurt and came hurrying back in search of a prize.
Thus, right across.
Doctor, this raised part to the end of the jetty, 10 feet high, do you know?
Oh, well, it's 8 or 9 years since I was last in Almeria, but the chapel on it withstands the tall winter storm waves.
Then it would certainly protect our hull from their fire.
Aye, the Sophie will be tolerably safe there, sir, anchored so with a spring on her cable.
As heavy a fire as you can then, Mr. Dillon, playing on the mole there and over the tower, while we run in as fast as ever we can to take the battery from behind.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, me, sir. I am going ashore. Shall we say 10 minutes to run from our landing place to the tower?
Allow 20 minutes, if you please. You portly men of a sanguine complexion often die suddenly from unexpected exertion.
I do wish you would not say things like that, Doctor.
Well, it is the heat. Brings on congestion, apoplexy.
Besides, I am not portly.
Oh, you can't think so, Doctor. The captain has an uncommon genteel figure.
I may not be perfect, Mr. Dillon, but by God, I am not shy. Dear heaven, what a bloody great gun!
C'est une belle de 24 livres, capitaine, à mon avis.
Domestique, monsieur. We can't get our prize out. I shall burn her where she lies, and the whole bloody village along with her, if necessary.
Roll up, lads. Soon be giving them a taste of what the Sophie's serving up now.
Ah, c'est mieux, en effet.
Nearly there.
Road our ball!
Out and into a file quickly there. Now the lines. Mr. Watt?
Here we are, sir.
Mr. Marshall, there's yours. Clap onto your lines all. Each man to his knot.
Ready? Ready there, you men.
What? What is it?
Good luck yourself.
Oh, merci very much, mon capitaine. All ready there?
All correct, sir.
Sir.
Then tear away!
Splendid fireworks, Mr. Dave.
Aye, sir. This is what I call a nice, well-matched, bare-knuckle battle.
Fire! The Spaniards are busy in their fort. Must be near time for their surprise.
Stop, you men!
Please, God, let the rocket come soon.
Mr. Pullings, where's that rocket? Well done. Ready, then?
Aye, aye, ready, sir.
Ready, sir.
Come on!
There it is, Mr. Dave.
Sir, shift your fire, lads.
Oh, don't I wish I was with them. Like bloody rickets.
So little we can do.
I'm Jacob!
Take the force,
on the jetty, lads!
Well, I should have them, Mr. Babington, that we'll know when the guns are silent.
Prime!
Prisoners! Mr. Marshall!
Free, sir, just! The rest all ran.
I am not bloody shy!
No one could think it of you, sir.
What?
I said no one could think,
Mr.
sir.
Mr. Pullings, spike up those guns.
Aye, aye, sir.
Capitaine.
Capitaine Aubry. Monsieur Laia. Well fought, sir. Bien batté, indeed. Should you care to take a crowbar to these guns?
Oh, better to make a leap.
Eh?
Make all fort leap, hein? Sauter en l'air, hein?
Boom! Boom, sir. Very, leap in the air, yes? Well, then do it at once, I'll tell you.
Well,
Mr.
Hey,
Marshall! You and all our people are to cut along at once to the jetty. Get the settee's head round and her sails loosed.
At once, sir.
Sergeant Quinn!
Sir!
Your marines to form at the landward end. Fire all the time whether you see anyone or not.
It'll be done so, sir.
And while you're doing that, Captain Lanier and I will be blowing up the fort.
Oh, we got it there.
It could almost be daylight.
Three tartans of fire. Fine blaze.
Look up, man.
And you can see our men quite clear on the deck of that merchantman. Ready to bring her out.
Yes, a very neat action. I must tell you.
Never trust an artillery officer. Look at Bonaparte. Sadly out, I'm afraid, like his calculations.
Well, how could he have guessed at a second magazine? It was a very pretty explosion, though.
What's that?
Very pretty.
Pretty? Me? You jest, of course.
No, the explosion.
Ah.
The deafness will pass, and the hair will grow again, I expect. In default of which, you can at least afford now the most splendid wig imaginable, should you wish it.
Thank you for that. What do you think of my official letter?
Rather bald. I beg your pardon.
Commended everyone, I should have.
Everyone except yourself, I believe.
Yes, well, that's the nature of these damn reports. And if you think this or I are bald, Doctor, you should see Monsieur La Ear.
Oh, the doxies, they swoon for young Goldilocks' hair. But Jack spurns them. He swore sure he'd take no pox there. He'd a commandant's wife, she came sat on his knee, for she loved how he played her his fiddly-dee. Oh, the girls, they grieve and cry lack-a-day, for their harbour's all empty when Jack sails away. And the Spaniards quail and pray that the sea won't send back lucky Jack and his fiddly-dee.
My Lord Jack! A wig!
It is only for the moment.
Oh, and your poor dear face.
There are fewer colours in this garden, I know. But, Molly, you will find undamaged all that is vital.
Jack, I...
Captain Aubrey! Oh, this
you will
way,
have to discover that later,
way.
Eh?
The servants told me you were here, sir. Molly, Colonel Pitt is awaiting your company for the morning ride you promised.
Pitt? Not that damned ugly
oh,
bore
of course,
of a cavalry
I'm afraid
officer.
You must excuse me, Captain Aubrey.
Mrs. Hart?
As far as ugly girls, Aubrey...
It will pass, sir.
I want to present to you young Henry Ellis.
Good morning, sir.
And to you, sir.
I have every hope and confidence he'll make you a grand midshipman, sir, and his family's pride.
But for a month or two, Mr. Ellis... You are with us to see how you take to the service and whether you're suited to it.
I shall do my best, sir.
You're joining in a lucky ship, sir, with a lucky captain.
You'll lose a Sophie, that's what. And more, you'll either get us all knocked on the head or taken prisoner.
Oh, you have to have an eye for the main chance, Mr. Ricketts. And Captain Aubrey certainly has
oh,
that.
Oh, the main chance, the main chance. I've no wish to drag out my days in a French or Spanish prison, Mr. Watt.
That's why you're writing to transfer, then, is it?
I don't want my Charlie knocked on the head,
oh,
either.
Come now. A naval officer has to run risks.
I'm not unwilling for him to run them. But the ordinary risks of the profession, not these capers. That bloody great battery. This setting about everything we see, regardless of size or number, it's tempting fate, that's what.
I dare say people are vexed. And I dare say they call me Beelzebub. But that don't make me Beelzebub.
No, does it not? Well, however that may be, you have stirred up the mercantile interest all along this coast.
I should hope so.
I have heard the Spanish call you a false, harsh, brutal, murdering villain, an odious man. There is particularly a wealthy man by the name of Mateo. Three of your prizes were once his.
Well, I dare say he's wonderfully incensed against me, then.
I'm told he has chartered a ship of force to protect the coasting trade, but even more to pursue the Sophie, a Zeebeck frigate, whatever that is. Cacafuego is her name.
Cacafuego? Doesn't that mean...
Yes, it does.
You should make a fine spy.
Well, certainly I would, if I chose to play the part.
So, if you did choose, you could find out what ships and convoys were sailing, when inspected, how laden?
I dare say.
Even the golden galleons themselves, perhaps.
Is it not a curious and illogical thing that it is right and proper to speak of the Sophie's enemies? If beyond question, it must be wrong and dishonourable to consider her prey.
You are right, of course. You must give a rabbit a sporting chance.
She's a man of war!
A frigate, is that?
If not a ship of the line. French, probably.
Reply to our private signal, sir! Blue ensign! Red pendant at the main! At the
fore! Hands to the braces, sou-west by sou. Half sou, Mr. Marshall.
Sou-west by sou, half sou, aye, sir.
6 months out of date, Doctor, that reply. Royals, law, and topsails, studsails.
Would she catch up with us?
I really couldn't say. Beyond an observation that it is very fortunate how the evenings are drawing in.
Mr. Babington?
Musgrave here thinks she may be the detainers.
Well, how would you know?
What, Cap? I was the prisoner aboard of us. A matter of 3 weeks and more took out of a collier.
Lock her down with my glass, then.
Yes, it's a fine glass, sir. Yeah, she's the detainers, all right.
What does she carry?
Give Mr. Dillon back his glass, Musgrave.
Begging pardon, sir. Well, she carries some 26 18-pounders on the main deck, sir. 18 long eights on the quarter deck of forecastle and a brass long 12.
18 long eights on the quarter deck and forecastle and a brass long 12 for a bow chaser.
Thank you, Mr. Dillon.
You never answer my question, but she might catch us.
She'll need to sail nearly 2 knots faster than the Sophie to do it by nightfall.
And the Dédaigneuse, Doctor, is no very famous sailor.
Then we may hope to slip away in the night.
Well, I once took part in a 32-hour chase, so it's not sure.
Oh, dear.
I was on the West Indian station. I covered more than 200 miles of sea, so you can see that in a case like this, Doctor, every fraction of a knot may count. Oh.
Man overboard!
Help! Help!
Who is it? It's Alice overboard, please! Sir! Alice! Alice, catch this!
Alice? What, young Alice?
Alice, catch it! Oh, you poor fool!
Captain Aubrey!
Come away, Doctor, if you please.
No, Captain Aubrey, let go of my arm, Mr. Dillon!
You must not interfere. It's his decision alone.
But the drowning boy is in his charge.
And so are the 80 men aboard this sloop. Make the calculation for yourself.
That one drowning midshipman is Mrs. Hart's own protege. A sort of a guest, as I was in our first voyage together. Would he have left me in the water, I wonder?
Look there. We're making 7 knots, Dédaigneurs 8. 10 minutes would lose a mile and more.
Still at all.
And your staring at him will not make him decide the easier.
Well, I know what I should do.
And I.
Probably not the same thing, though, James.
No.
Jolly well away! Stand by, fore and aft, ready to bring her into the wind!
Stand by there!
You see, Mr. Dillon?
The captain is more of your mind than mine.
As in so much.
Ready, sir!
Mr. Marshall, bring her to!
Aye, aye, sir.
But I hope our fate may not prove to be like Ellis's.
What, saved?
No, dead.
I beg leave to tell the court. I have no fault to find with my officers or my ship's company. The utmost endeavour was used by every person aboard the Sophie.
At all times, Captain Aubrey?
At all times, sir, and in all places.
Officers and ship's company, have any of you reason to find fault with the conduct of your captain, John Aubrey, in this matter of the surrender and loss of His Majesty's late sloop, the Sophie?
In episode 5 of Master and Commander by Patrick O'Brien, Michael Troughton played Captain Jack Aubrey and Nigel Anthony, Dr. Stephen Maturin. Charles Simpson played Lieutenant James Dillon, Peter Whitman, George Ricketts, Gavin Muir, Lord Keith, Russell Floyd, Mr. Watt, Neville Jason, Mr. Marshall, Francis Jeter, Molly Hart, Lloyd Johnston, the Judge Advocate, Danny Canaber, Mr. Babington, Nick Knight, Master Harry Ellis, Dominic Letts, Mr. Mowat, and Tom Bevan, Charles Ricketts. Master and Commander is dramatized in 6 episodes by Roger Daines, with accordion, pipe, and singing performed by Trevor Allen Davis. The director is Adrian Beans.